Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner. It is Thursday, April 3rd, 2014, just after 2 UTC, just before 2:30 UTC, I guess, 2:18 UTC, to be more specific. And I'm Sam Minter, of course, being anal on the time, and Yvonne Bowe is with us as usual. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello. Hello.
Are you doing an impression there of some sort?
No.
No. No.
No.
You're just using a funny voice?
So, April, yeah, well...
Or is it just your voice?
It's just part of my voice. Anyway, I mean, oh, by the way, before I forget...
Yes?
Rebecca has a very cute dog. Other than that, we could continue with a show at this time. Okay,
great. He is, of course, talking about one of our old college classmates who has been a guest on this show occasionally every once in a while.
Yes.
And I used to... Back in the day, every show, the middle break, was a poem from Rebecca's website.
But she killed the website.
She killed the website, and there's no more poems. And you know, and by the way, these weren't all poems by Rebecca. They were generally poems by other people.
She's
the
editor of a
website that published poems. Anyway, we do have a plan. We have stuff going on. What was that plan again? Oh, yes. We have Obamacare. There were some events related to Obamacare this week. There's not really much new on the plane, but hell, we'll talk about the plane a little bit, for a few minutes. There's a Supreme Court ruling on campaign finance, that's probably worth a word or two. There is a thing in New Jersey about, how the state is going to deal with Tesla and the way Tesla likes to sell cars and the way dealerships don't. That's a bit, the things were not really the things that did not make the cut this week. Just to let everybody know, no real update on the Ukraine. I mean, there is stuff going on there, but yeah, nothing to talk about. The CIA cover up of the torture report, blah blah blah. I talked about that a couple weeks ago. There's not really any new developments there. It's just continuing, to simmer. There was a new report about climate that came out from whatever the international organization that puts out these summaries every few years is. The NSA reform stuff we talked about last week has progressed a little bit. The one thing I've seen is a number of people reporting that, as Yvonne and I said, show us the details. A number of people have looked into some of these details and said that they're changing a few things, but nothing that really matters. Plus, they're trying to sneak in some terms that will actually expand powers in other areas. So, oh well.
Oh well.
Oh well. So, Yvonne.
Yeah.
Where do you want to start, or should I start rolling dice again?
We like the dice thing. Let's roll dice.
Okay, so I'm rolling dice. I've got I listed them in order. I'm gonna roll a four-sided die. Here we go. I got number four, so let's talk about Tesla first.
Tesla, okay, all right, we're going to Tesla. All right, so what happened in Jersey this time? Because last time I remember, they're prohibiting them in New Jersey. That's what I understood. And they're appealing that, but...
Yeah, I believe... Well, the new thing is basically that whatever the latest round of it, nothing... It's still... they still can't do it in New Jersey.
Okay, well, let's fill in people on. I just asked what the latest, just to make sure that I was caught up, because I was pretty sure I was caught up. Okay, let's explain this whole thing.
So Tesla, the April 2 additional news, by the way, is that Tesla is appealing the decision that was made last month.
Okay, so the deal is, everybody, I'm sure, that's listening to the show has bought a car,
and probably most of you have bought Teslas, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm sure they have. Yeah. Not really. But anyway, all of you have bought a car. Now, Sam, actually, I will say, bought a car in the 90s at a Saturn deal.
Okay? Yes, I did.
And we talked about, I remember a long time ago, how that experience was very different than going into a traditional car dealer. There was no haggling on the price. There's none of that crap. Okay, you go in, here's the car, here's the price, Here we go. There's no gimmicks. Sign the paperwork. We go, and you get a car, and you're done. All right? Tesla is trying that model. They don't want to go through dealers.
Well, and yeah, more than just the no haggle stuff. They want to not they want to sell direct to consumer without a dealer network, because dealers are independent middlemen. They're not like, if you go to your local Toyota dealer, it's not owned by Toyota.
Now, understand something. Automakers, for the most part, want dealers. Okay? And there are substantial financial reasons why. Okay, which Tesla doesn't have to deal with, because
most
other cars,
yeah,
there is inventory out there. All right, you don't get cars for the most part. Most people don't
that are made to order.
That are made to order. All right, if you don't have a car dealer who's actually holding the inventory, okay, that means that you have to hold all the inventory as a manufacturer. That's quite a few billions of dollars.
Or you have to move to a build on demand model.
Right.
Or something with a very low inventory,
which could be done, but proves to be a massive disadvantage when somebody else has a car right here, or you have to go to the other car and wait 3 months. Which for Tesla, a wait is it's a multi month wait for a vehicle. Right. Okay, it's not right away. So, it's a different sales model. There's advantages. There's disadvantages. There's other things. But Tesla wants to do.
I'll also say, looking at some of this history, of course, there's also a lot baked into law here. Like,
correct.
As you mentioned, there's some advantages to the manufacturers to do it this way. There's some reasons they wouldn't want to do it this way as well, because some of the laws that provide monopolies on local dealerships and areas areas of control and things like this make it very hard for the manufacturers to control the messaging and how the dealers work and quality control and all correct. Of this kind of stuff.
And I mean, basically, a lot of dealers are weasels. And if any guys are you going like I did, and I just shopped for a car the last 3 months, my God, is it an infuriating exercise? I mean, my experience was just flat out miserable. I can't describe it any other way.
And you got to think, I mean, you mentioned a lot of reasons why, you know, the big auto companies would want dealers as a middleman, but you got to think, on the flip side of that, they would like it if they could provide a better experience to their people too.
They do, and they keep doing certain things in order to try to push that experience. But yet at the same time, you've got two different. It's two areas. I mean, you know, you've got this finance part on the flip side, while you want to improve the customer experience on the other side. I will tell you that, you know, the car I bought, they sent me a survey. And I got to tell you, look, I bought the car because I really liked the car. Okay, all right. And I mean, it was the right price. It was the car that I wanted. But good God, I wrote up how miserable it was dealing with their dealers.
Right.
Okay, all right. Because it was. I mean, I had one guy who basically, I mean, we wound up one day that we were done with the car shopping. I mean, I had such a massive headache, and we didn't buy a fucking car. I got so pissed off, I just walked out. I said, I'm not doing this. You're screwing me. You keep telling me you're not. I keep telling you you are. You keep telling me I don't understand. Well, you know what? I do understand, and I'm walking out. And that's basically what I did. Okay. You know, since they wouldn't budge. So I did go somewhere else where the shopping experience was better, even though there was a little quirk at the end that I was really irritated. But for the most part, they did something much closer to what my expectations were. But it shouldn't be that miserable to buy a car. And I understand why Elon Musk wants to go and sell the cars directly.
They have quote unquote dealerships that are company owned, but they're really just showrooms. There's no sales process.
There is no.
You know, they show you the stuff. You can schedule a test drive. They've got all kinds of information out there, blah, blah, blah. But then if you want to buy it, you go home and you order it online.
Correct.
And I guess what? It shows up in front of your house a few months later.
I guess. Yeah. That must be how they're doing it. So,
you know, and
I mean, there's, I mean, which I'm, I don't know. Is there a Tesla office near here? Yeah, there is. What am I talking about? Of course there is. I mean, because there. I mean, I live in a neighborhood where there is a lot of Teslas. Okay, yeah. All right.
There, by the way, there's one Tesla showroom within an easy walk of where I work, and there's another one in a mall that's not that far from where I live.
The one that I've got nearby is in a mall. I mean, they've got it right at the shopping mall right near my house. They have a...
So there's plenty around here, and I see them. You know, these are not a rare sight these days here. I mean, you don't see them as often as I see Toyotas or something, but, you know, I see them on a regular basis. They're not unusual to see around this area.
Yeah. So, look, now, I did not buy a Tesla. I mean, you know, when I was looking at a car, I mean, I thought about it for a little bit, but look, I just the other day, I got a car that has substantially much better fuel economy than my old vehicle. As a matter of fact, I went and I actually bought a car. I bought the car. I did not go with my more power strategy. I decided to be far more eco-friendly and bought the car with actually the smallest engine they sold for the car. Okay, I did the total opposite.
Which, for those who don't know, is saying something for Yvonne.
Yes, all right. And I consciously made that decision, okay, all right, that I would do that. And so now the one thing is that I drove, look, I had to go to a meeting in Tampa 2 days ago. Tampa round trip is 500 miles. And that's my problem with me owning a car like a Tesla. I could not do that trip.
Unless there was a rapid charging station at your destination.
Because...
It'll make it one way.
It will make it one way, yes, but then I would have to wait because...
No, the rapid charging stations charge the whole thing up in like 30, 40 minutes, which probably was less than your meeting.
In 30, 40 minutes?
I
thought it said 3-4 hours.
I think that was the old charging stations. I could be wrong. You've probably looked into it more.
Okay, hang on, because
they're different classes of charging that you can get.
But let's face it. I mean, I have to plan it out.
Yes.
I mean, there's no way that there is no freaking rapid charging station near where I had to go to the meeting. Okay, so. You know, it's bottom line is that I just could not have made it.
Let's back off from talking about Tesla
back to the sales cycle. Okay, I don't know if they're going to be able to get this modified. I mean, there's just so much opposition.
Well, here's the thing on this. And this is one of the interesting things here is, you know, supposed business conservative free market, Chris Christie Republican is all about, let's keep all the regulations in place that that prevent basically innovation in this space. Because it's not like, you know, what is the obstacle here? Is actually the legal requirements around how cars are sold. It's not that, you know, Tesla, you know, there's practical reasons why they can't do this. Tesla has shown in a variety of locations that they absolutely can do this. But the law in a number of states says that cars must be sold through dealerships, and that's the only way you can do it.
Right.
And that these dealerships have certain areas of exclusivity that apply and blah, blah, blah. And all of this is imposed by law, not by the free market. And so... The argument here is, now one of the things I saw on this was that, Christie's argument on this is not that he necessarily thinks this is the way it should be, but this is the way the law is today, so we're not going to get you're not going to get around it by us deciding to interpret the law creatively. If we're going to change this, it has to be changed legislatively, and I don't necessarily disagree with that, but apparently the reality is also there is not a chance in hell, at least in New Jersey, of changing this legislatively because, you know, the dealership networks and the lobbyists on behalf of the dealers have such a disproportionate influence over that legislative process that they're not about to take away these regulations that effectively entrench their control over that market.
Okay. Well, I think that he's pushing hard enough that he may get the changes.
Well, what I see is like, you know, I mean, you may not be able to say this about other states, but New Jersey is a small state. Can't he say, well, fuck you then, set up a bunch of dealerships in Delaware, Pennsylvania, and New York surrounding the state, right across the border, and advertise the hell out of it in New Jersey, say, your Tesla? Come over here.
He could do that.
You know, and put the pressure on that way. But, like, I look at this kind of stuff, and I, from supposed, like, look, I'm very much free market on these kinds of things. I think there is a place for regulation. I am not a purist who says there's no point for government regulation whatsoever. However, if you're going to have government regulation, it needs to be very carefully and narrowly tailored. Like, I'm okay with things that say, for instance, that, you know, it's a good thing to have safety equipment in cars.
Yes.
You know, I agree with that. I'm okay with that kind of regulation. But once it gets very detailed, and even the safety regulations have gone overboard in some places where they define specific types of safety equipment rather than just certain targets and goals. But anyway, in this kind of case, there's no... The regulation should, in general, be stuff that's out there to protect the consumer or encourage competition or... encourage innovation, things along those lines. But what we're doing here with this kind of regulation is none of the above. It is exclusively to protect the entrenched interests and make sure that they can
continue making money
the way they are.
A lot of people argue that it, if you hear the dealers talk,
yep.
They say it's not so, you know, that we protect consumers, that we protect them against monopolies from audio manufacturers and collusion and some other stuff and blah, blah, blah. Because you gotta remember one thing, okay? If you think about some of the large manufacturers in the world, I mean, they own so many brands.
Yeah.
Like, for example, you know, and right now those dealers are many ways are set up independently.
Yeah.
But, you know, you take Volkswagen Group, for example. I mean, Volkswagen owns, they own Volkswagen, they own Audi, they own Porsche, they own, you know, they own brands like across the board. So does GM, so does Ford. It's one of those things where, I mean, some people argue that. I don't know if that argument... Well,
the initial reason these were put in place is there was a dealer network, but there weren't laws around it. When it originally developed, there was a dealer network. However, the manufacturers had huge amounts of influence where if they didn't like a dealer, they could just dump them and move across the street, and that dealer would be completely screwed. So there were reasons why the laws were originally put in place, but the way the original laws were put in place were, you know, very highly tailored to that situation and focused. And it seems like, you know, I don't know if they were not well constructed or they were very well constructed because their goal was to protect the dealerships, period. And so, yeah, okay, you protected the dealership, but at the same time, you're potentially squashing a lot of innovation. You're entrenching monopolies that, yeah, it's almost a rule of these things that when you provide monopoly powers, the result is bad service. You see it in cable, you see it in telecommunications, you see it in car dealerships.
Which is why I'm shocked. I would be shocked that, what was it, the Comcast is trying to buy Time Warner Cable, and I'm like, geez, if that gets approved, I'm shocked. Because, I mean, they would control such a big percentage, but I digress anyway. Yeah, yeah, monopolies are bad.
Monopolies are bad, and I see this as the kind of thing where you'd think, you know, the sort of conservative Republican-ish is not saying Christie is particularly conservative. We all know he's sort of moderate. Right. But you'd think folks like this would be, yeah, let's go for the innovation. Let's open it up. We don't have to completely dismantle the dealership overnight. But, you know, hey, if a new company wants to come in and compete on a different model, hey, let them go. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Let the consumers decide.
By the way, the supercharging station for 100% takes 75 minutes. Now, it's 80% at 40 minutes.
There you go.
Okay. All right. Just, by the way, just confirm that.
So yeah. I was closer to right than you.
Yes, you were correct. But, I thought it was like 3 hours total.
Well, and that's the older chargers. There's three classes of charging on electric vehicles at this time. There's like the there's the superchargers, which are pretty fast, like an hour and a half ish, like you were just saying. There's the regular 220 volt chargers that are, you know, a number of hours, like six or seven. And then there are the last class is if you just plug it into a regular household current 120 volt outlet, basically you're talking 12 hours overnight-ish kind of stuff, but you can charge them on those kinds of, you know, you can just take it home, drag an extension cord out and plug in your car. But they take a really long time doing it that way.
Well, not convenient yet for me anyway. I'm sure that for some people, maybe in the future.
Well, and it all, right, and again, it all depends on where you're going and what you're doing and the how built out these supercharger stations are.
Right. Well, I did see the map that they're extending the network and all that stuff still anyway.
Yeah, no, they're getting more and more as the time
goes. There's a lot of people I know that don't do what I do. They could live with it. No problem. Okay, well, all right.
And Tesla has the biggest range of any of these type of vehicles out there. When we were car shopping, I mentioned that my wife was looking at, what was it, the Leaf. The Leaf.
And, well, but, that thing though doesn't even do 100 miles,
exactly.
I think.
But like she was saying, you know, look, all I do is go back to school. I do, on an average normal day, I do maybe 30 or 40 miles. Mm-hmm. I'm well within the range. It would do what I need to do. And, you know, hey, we've got other cars in the family if we need to go on a road trip or something.
Right.
And so that would be fine. She ended up deciding against it because it kept coming back to, yeah, but what if I do have to go 200 miles and the other cars aren't available?
Right.
Yeah. You know?
Anyway. All right. So Tesla may get this, may not. Who knows? There's still a lot of opposition. You know, I don't.
Now my question is, their model is selling them online. This is about whether or not they have showrooms. Can somebody still buy a Tesla online in New Jersey? Or is that outlawed, too? And they actually have to drive across the border to order it?
I think that they can't sell them, period, even if it's online. That's what I understood.
See, that's, to me, like, that's incredibly obnoxious. Like, whatever your things are about, like, you know, having the dealership now, like, if I already know what I want, I know I want the damn Tesla, I have the money to do it.
Because it's a regulation that bans car sales directly to consumers, not just the showrooms.
Right.
It's a law that bans direct sales to consumers, period.
So what? I have to drive to another state to buy my car. And then am I allowed to do it then, or is the fact that I'm a New Jersey resident keep me from that camp?
I think it may keep you from it. Because you got to register the car in the state of New Jersey, right?
Well, they don't say you can't register it. Like, you can buy it somewhere else and drive it back to New Jersey and then register it, right?
I guess.
Because, like, if I've had my Tesla for 3 years and I moved to New Jersey, I have to be able to register the damn thing.
I would assume, yeah. I mean,
so, you know, I may have to, like, I don't know how these things work. Do I have to buy it and register it in the state I buy it first and then re-register it?
Well, let me hear you. The argument from the James Appleton, president of the State Coalition of Automotive Retailers, said... Tesla wants total control over distribution to crush and eliminate competition. Franchises are intended to promote competition, which benefits the consumer.
Whatever. I tell you, my take on this is anything that crushes the dealership network and makes it more likely that we move to another model of buying cars, so much the better.
Because it sucks. I know. It really sucks.
The Saturn experience was a bit better 15, 20 years ago. Of course, Saturn's gone now. It wasn't that horrible when my wife bought her car a little while ago, but it was still like, there was still a back and forth and a thing going on. And it's just like, don't give me any of that.
And the paperwork and the gimmick and the thing, and we want to add this, and what about that?
And what about that? And all sorts of bullshit about the financing options and all kinds of things like that, too. Yeah, it should just be like, here's what it is. Take it or leave it. Go shopping.
I know. Yep.
Anyway. Okay, let's take a break. My dice son again. Is throwing things in the hallway. We'll take a break. We'll be back after this, and we'll roll the dice again to pick another topic. Back in a second.
Okay,
Alex, you want a hug before I resume? Did I hear that right? No?
Killing me. So if I go in here, I can order one? Okay.
Okay, I'm just going to start again. No? Okay. Here you go. You want to say hi to Yvonne, too? He's talking to microphone. Say hi to Yvonne.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Ow, ow, ow.
Are you barking again? You sometimes have you sometimes have such intelligent discussions, and then we put you in front of like other people, and suddenly you're barking like a dog.
Is he a pretty dog, by the way?
He's a good dog.
Okay. All right. Good. Just want to make sure.
Okay, you gonna let me get started again? Oh, don't lick my head. Okay, back to mommy. Here you go. Vroom.
You're doing good so far.
Yeah, you're doing great. Okay. Here we go. Getting the dice out.
Oh, this car gets pretty expensive with the options, I'll tell you what.
The Tesla?
Oh, jeez. I'm up to $88,000.
Yeah, so well, you know.
I add the wall connector, and now I'm $89,777.
And you're talking the sedan, right? The sports cars.
Yeah.
And of course, do you know what their target date is for their consumer sedan? Because their strategy was to start at the top of the market and work their way down.
It's not going to be until they build that massive battery plant that a few states now are saying, "Hey, put the plant here, and we'll change those laws, that pesky laws that bother you."
Well, okay. And you were talking about battery. Did you see the latest technology that Tesla is working on for the battery issue?
Which battery?
Instead of charging your battery, mm-hmm. you'll drive into a station. You'll drive over a supply pit or something, and robots will remove your existing battery and put in a freshly charged battery in less than 5 minutes.
Can I tell you that concept? Listen, I remember it must have been over 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
In Popular Mechanics, they were talking about the future of how it would be if we did electric cars.
Yeah.
And that's precisely what they showed in a future diagram of how electric cars would work.
And apparently they've already got prototypes working, et cetera, and they're figuring out the logistics of making it into a production system.
But yeah, I would say that would be, if you could get that going, you'd have enough places, you know, available where you could be on the road and you go just, oh, here you go, boom, boom, swap out, swap in, boom, you're done.
Just like you change your batteries and everything else.
Exactly, absolutely. I mean, you know, that would make sense. Let's see. The tech package adds a host of features to an already advanced car. But it doesn't come standard with navigation? Jesus. Okay. I got to pay an extra $3,700 for navigation?
See, this is where, as I do, I attach my damn phone to the dashboard.
Oh, Jesus. Well, I mean, but, you know, the damn display in the Tesla is quite nice.
Yeah,
yeah. A smarter parking sensors, $500. No fog lamps. You know, for some reason, all the German cars are getting rid of fog lamps. I guess nobody needs them. They're useless.
It's not foggy enough.
No, it's just that the new fangled lighting in cars is good enough that the fog lamps are irrelevant.
I have fog lights on my car. I've turned them on twice since I bought it.
Premium interior lighting. All right?
Uh-huh.
Add ambiance to Model S with strategically placed LED lights that illuminate without reflecting off the windshield.
And they probably change color, lights. Too. My wife has one that has that.
Second row footwell lights, second row puddle lights. For a cost of $1,000, by the way, go. All right? That's another. All the options. It's just, okay, so I larded it up with options. I wound up at $95,000.
Uh-huh.
That's quite a...
You're online, right? You can just hit the buy button and you're done.
It says order right there. I could just order it right now.
You put it on your card?
Actually, they only take a deposit, like, right now, first.
Ah, okay.
I will say that my car has those lights that I got to pay $1,000 extra on the Tesla stand.
Yeah, but, you know, they bake it into the price. Probably not.
Probably not $1,000. My car was a lot cheaper than this, gotta be honest. Anyway,
all right. Let's roll the dice, see what's next. Here we go. Let's see.
Roll it.
Two. So that would be the plane. Let's talk about the plane. The plane.
So apparently, you know, CNN has figured out that the only way that they get ratings is by covering such things like this.
I
want to
say one thing about this before you rant about CNN is I've been following on Twitter, and like a number of times a day, people were making fun of CNN for various things they're talking about, the plane, anchors making shit up, anchors not having any idea what they're talking about, anchors asking if it might have been paranormal or a black hole.
Yes.
and basically just making fun of the nonstop coverage of this. And I was like, it's got to be an exaggeration, right? And then... I pick what I listen to in the car during my commute. I roll dice for that, too.
Okay.
And I picked the audio from CNN. So I was listening to CNN audio on the commute home the other day, or the commute to work. I forget which.
And they're not exaggerating.
And it really was. It was a stupid plate. And like, okay, I'm sorry. I feel for all of the people who are directly impacted by this and who died in this and their families and blah, blah, blah. And I realize for you, this is incredibly important.
Listen, we're not minimizing the fact, it happened 3 weeks ago.
It's been three weeks.
Wall-to-wall coverage.
And wall-to-wall coverage, if there was new stuff happening, okay. I buy that. If there was new stuff happening, if there was dramatic new revelations, fine. But there's been effectively no news for a week and a half.
Well, look, a couple of times over the last few weeks, I tuned into CNN to look at this, right? Okay. And I mean, it was just, Wolf Blitzer going wall to wall, just saying stupid and asking stupid questions.
Oh, and it makes it worse if it's Wolf Blitzer, because he's just an idiot.
Oh, God. I mean, and it's just, okay. So, I mean, at some point, it was just so off the wall. And then they were showing, like, these pictures of, like, Jenny McCarthy thinking she found a wreckage and shit like this. you didn't hear about that? Jenny McCarthy tweeted a picture saying, oh, look, I looked at the sat pictures. Here's the plane.
I did not see that.
Yeah, so I was at a bar when this was happening. I mean, well, listen, let me put it this way. This happened. I was just like, I mean, we were laughing. I mean, there's like the people in the bar just uncontrolled laughter. So anyway, so then two nights ago, I think it was, or was it last night? Earthquake in Chile? Last night. Last night, right? So I try to tune to CNN to see if they've got any coverage. Well, they can't really get out of their fucking way of their damn plane coverage to cover an earthquake that happened just now. Okay? I guess occasionally they broke in to the plane coverage in order to report.
Yeah, I must admit, when I was listening to them, about once an hour, they would take 2 minutes to cover the other top two stories of the day.
Right. And then they would go back to fucking talking about the plane.
Yes.
I mean, really? Yeah, well, anyway, bottom line is that we still haven't found shit. It's becoming more and more obvious that the Malaysians have really screwed this thing up, you know, wall to wall, okay? And I...
Well, yeah, because it keeps coming out that various things they said before were not quite right. It keeps coming out that they knew various things before they said them, right. You know, and kept it quiet for a long time. Now, some of that's understandable. Like, if you've got information that is not, you don't know if it's reliable yet or not, you don't necessarily want to be coming out with it right away. But on the other hand, there are other cases where they've come out with things that turned out to be completely wrong. So it's not like they're being conservative out of an abundance of caution. They just have no idea what they're doing. And they've been slower on things that seem to make them look bad. They've been faster on things that seem to make them look better. And, you know, it's just been... Yeah, you're right. This whole situation has been made worse by the fact that the Malaysians who are coordinating it quite clearly are in over their heads. They're in over their heads. You could import other things to them too, but they're over their heads.
Over their heads. So I mean, at this point, I don't know if we'll ever find this plane. I really don't.
Yeah. Now I did read. I tweeted an article just a few minutes ago. Not a few minutes ago, but a little while before we started recording, from some other independent analyst saying that you know, if you actually analyze the satellite data that they said confirmed the southern loop, it doesn't actually rule out the northern route, because it only rules out the northern route if you make some assumptions that we can't really make. But that's only based on the publicly released data, and they're holding a bunch of stuff back.
Right.
But meanwhile, I'm like, okay, yeah, okay, even if the satellite data doesn't rule out the northern route, we've had enough governments along the northern route say, if they came through here, we'd know.
Right.
I think even so, like, the preponderance of evidence is the southern route, and they probably are looking in an area that's fairly close to what might be relevant. However, you know, this stuff sinks, stuff drifts, stuff goes, you know, whatever. You know, it's a really, really big freaking ocean. It's really bad conditions there. It's rough seas. I wouldn't be surprised if this goes, you know, sort of the Amelia Earhart direction, where 50, 60 years from now, people are still saying, we're not sure exactly what happened, but maybe it's this.
Yeah.
Or longer.
That's where we seem to be headed. I mean, look, I'm sure that at some point, even if we can't find it out, I mean, wreckage will show. I mean,
at some point.
Yeah. At some point. But, I mean, it may well be. If we can't find it because we can't really narrow down the search area properly, it's just going to be at random that it's going to happen, because it just floats to wherever.
Eventually makes its way somewhere.
Right.
Or someone doing something completely unrelated to the search happens to notice it.
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, we might have, you know, 50 years from now, technology has improved immensely, and they've got detailed mapping of the bottom of the ocean in that part of the world, and they find it that way.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, something like
those
that.
Those are about the only things.
You know, or they could get lucky in the next week.
I mean, yeah.
You know, or suddenly it shows up and, you know, flying towards Paris or something. But I think the chances of that are negligible at this point.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right on that. So, anyway. I know that I think Stephen Colbert, for some reason, was in some hullabaloo about some tweet that was posted.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, the thing is that he was making fun. There was a video of him, like, talking about
it. Is this still related himself to the plane, or are you just going
down
a complete tangent?
Yes,
okay,
yes.
Go ahead, Because I know about this issue, and I'm like, what's it got to do with the plane? Go ahead.
Because at some point, he was defending it, and he was talking about how all of a sudden the mainstream media caught it, and it says at one point, and even CNN broke the airplane coverage to talk about my tweet.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So,
and
yes,
that, by the way, was a big hullabaloo over nothing as well.
Yes.
Okay, let's take another break. I do want to mention two things before we take the break that also fall in. You mentioned the Chilean earthquake last night. There was around an 8.0, I believe. It just went across Twitter that there's been a 7.4 aftershock right there.
Oh, Jesus.
So, which is also a fairly significant earthquake.
Yeah.
And so,
last night I spent the whole night listening to Chilean radio just to make sure that they were, I mean, thankfully, they didn't have a large tsunami cause as the last one did. A lot of people evacuated.
Well, and
I haven't heard from any of my friends down there. I mean, the last one 4 years ago, I mean, the pictures were brutal. I mean, of the damage in Santiago.
Now, so far this time, it seemed like the reports so far have been fairly minimal.
Well, it was the epicenter was way north of the other one.
So was it out in a fairly unpopulated area?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, yes. It was much further away. I mean, because the epicenter of the last one was relatively close to the capital.
Right.
And it was offshore, but it was like a lot closer. So that's why the damage to Santiago was significant. But this time around, it was further north. So damage further away in the larger cities was not like that. I mean, they were really more worried about the tsunamis, and because they did get impacted, and there was a massive evacuation. But at this point, apparently, they've lucked out. I mean, the waves, they got some 7-foot waves around there, but nothing really, that caused as substantial damage as that. Now, the reality is that there aren't that many reports about the northern area, because sparsely populated, they haven't had as many reports as the damage and other things. I think they said something about about 6 dead,
yeah,
up north, but nothing like what happened last time, thankfully.
The other thing to mention real quick in terms of breaking news is in the couple hours before we recorded, there was another one of these mass shootings at Fort Hood. So far, 4 dead, including the shooter, 16 injured. It's a breaking news event as we are recording, so I have nothing to add to that. Anybody listening will know more. But, you know, these things happen fairly frequently, and I think we talked about as much as we could about this kind of topic back when the school shooting happened more than a year ago now, right?
Yeah, so, yep.
Anyway.
And then the effect of that was really basically that everybody worse. People passed the bills liberalizing gun laws even more. So anyway.
Except in a couple states.
Like except
Connecticut.
Right.
Which was, of course, directly affected by that one, and a fairly liberal state to begin with.
Yes.
Anyway, let's take that break. We'll come back and hit one of our last two topics. Back after this. Okay, we're back. Okay, I'm getting ready for the dice again. This is exciting. This is exciting. You know, I know you guys can't handle the suspense any further. But here we go. Obamacare.
Obamacare. There we go. All right. So President Obama was making a lot of hay over a headline number that really doesn't say a lot.
Yep.
I mean, yes, they did reach that target of 7 million signups that they had. But the reality is that because we don't know how many of those people were paying the premiums, what the breakdown of the numbers are, how many of those people previously had insurance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
So now, there are a couple
things. We have no clue as to what the hell the number means.
Now, you are right about that. I'll grant you that. But I will say one thing in defense of them. The 7 million number was predicated along certain assumptions about how those other things you mentioned will break down.
Agreed. Totally agreed.
So the question is going to be, and you're absolutely right, that we don't know this yet. Do those other numbers line up to where the predictions were for those numbers? Now, from what I've been hearing so far, there have been a couple leaks that say the percentage paying is somewhere between the 80 and 90%.
I've heard that number too.
Which is approximately what they expected, I think. And however, the percentage of people who are sort of young, healthy people is falling behind the expectations of where it needs to be. So they needed that number to be around 30%, and I've heard numbers closer to 12 to 15 on that side of things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all of those are sort of unofficial leaked numbers. We don't have official numbers talking about those things. Because, of course, they're going to report... they're going to report on the numbers that look the most exciting to them.
Exactly, and I get that, and I give them the fact that, let's face it, at first we thought, I mean, let's face it, with all the snafus and glitches and everything that happened at the beginning, I mean, you know, the fact that actually that many people were able to sign up is a good thing. Now, the on the flip side, I mean, it's still difficult to. I mean, I personally find it difficult to say yes, everything's been accomplished when we don't have all the details behind the numbers, I guess. So yes, everything as it started, it's not as a disaster as it started with the signups. But we still don't know how good or bad it really is at this point. For me, I find it tough to tell. Now, on the other hand, you know, like certain people, I think it also it brings on the flip side this thing where it just seems like a lot of the people who are against it, I'm not going to just say Republicans, but just in general people who are against it for whatever the hell reason, they keep thinking that it was just going to implode and people were just not going to sign up, and then just everybody's not going to have health care. It's going to be a disaster. Doctors are out of business and the world's going to implode. Well, kids. It's not going to happen. So,
I'll say two things there. One, yes, there are probably a few people who honestly believe those things, but I think most of that is not necessarily people who honestly predicted that this is what's going to happen. It's people presenting the worst case scenario in order to scare people and change opinions.
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree.
You know, and I'll stick to what I've said for a while now when we've talked about this, is you won't be able to truly make evaluations on these changes and what their effects are overall for years, because it needs time to get fully baked into the system. It's not just what happens in the first 6 months that's going to matter here, or even the first year. You know, to really get a good handle and evaluation on did this successfully meet its goals or not, you're going to have to wait 10 years, 15 years to see that. And what's the measure that's going to matter here? In the end, it's going to be what is the percentage of the American population that's uninsured? That's the one number that, you know, if you pair this back to its ultimate goals, goal number one is to reduce the number of uninsured people. Goal number two was to start pushing healthcare costs down. Both of those things are long-term things. It's going to take a long time to see where we really are with that. I suspect on the first one, the answer is yes, the number of uninsured will go down, but there'll still be way too many uninsured. And so they'll still be pressured to do something else in another 10, 15 years once another generation has gone by and we're ready to have that battle again. On healthcare costs, I don't think it's going to be effective. I think healthcare costs are going to continue to go up because I don't think the way the reforms are structured fundamentally do anything about that problem.
Well, look, healthcare costs are continuing to go up, but there is one. Look, the last couple of years, the rate of increase of healthcare costs has actually slowed down. Now, I mean, in the end, does that mean that it solved the problem? No. What is the long-term trend? I don't know. And I know that the law didn't do a number of things in order to address that, but I mean, healthcare costs, for whatever the heck reason, the last 3 years have actually. I mean, their unrelenting increase is abated to a certain extent. So, yeah.
And what you want to see, like, there are a number of charts that come out every once in a while when people are debating this that compare internationally healthcare results versus amount spent. Mm-hmm. And if you look at that, there's a fairly linear relationship between those two numbers. If you compare like dozens and dozens of countries, basically the more they spend on healthcare overall, the better the healthcare results, with two outliers. And I believe those two outliers, I know one of them was the U.S., I believe the other one is Russia, where basically the graph shows compared to all the other countries, they're not getting the same value per dollar.
Right.
And so the question is, can you do something that gets the U.S. at least back in line with that trend that, okay, if we're spending a lot of money, so be it, as long as we're getting really good results for it.
Unfortunately, we aren't.
Time for a break again?
Yes. Well, anyway, that's that, basically, on Obamacare. I don't think, you know, we got anything more other than, you know, they reached a milestone. No, it is what it is. It didn't implode.
I do have a couple things to say here.
Oh, okay.
We'll take a break. But just a minute. I have to make one more point or so. The other is one thing you are seeing here, and this goes along with my predictions at the end of last year. This is not going away as a political football. You know, this is still something where every time there's a development of any sort, you're seeing all kinds of attacks on this. You're seeing the Republicans go wild on this. You're seeing the Democrats sort of give lukewarm defenses. You're seeing the president celebrate like he did today. This is by no means going away as a political football. It may slowly get baked in over time, but you know, in the last round of there were some special elections in the last month. This was a major issue in those special elections, and I stand by my prediction that come November in the midterms, you're going to hear quite a lot about Obamacare.
Well, I don't know. I do keep thinking that here's the thing. As time goes on and people aren't like denied care and like people aren't like I think that a lot of these arguments are based on anecdotes that based on anecdotes that make people feel like, you know, oh, this guy lost the coverage over here, this guy lost it over there. But it becomes kind of, I mean, but when, it's just people start realizing, well, I don't know, that's not really reality.
Or to put it another way, I'm sure it is real for certain people, but it's rare, and there are a lot more people who are actually benefited from it. But as you tweeted a link a while ago, and I've seen a number of stories on, this is also very, very different state by state.
Yes,
and depending on how much the local governments have embraced this versus how much they're fighting it versus how much money they've put into it, the results of what is happening is incredibly different if you're talking about California versus Arkansas versus Florida versus New York. And generally speaking, because red states have been resisting more and blue states have been embracing more, you're seeing better results in blue states so far, which will only serve to further put in the wedge between what those people in the red states think about it and what people in the blue states think about it. It's not going to bring that together. Because for the most part, you know, it is more of a clusterfuck in the red states.
Well, It is, to a certain extent. It is to a certain extent because they were dependent on the federal website, which we know was a disaster at first. But let's face it, as those experiences start abating and the people actually sign up and they're actually having their health care, I mean, that also goes away as well. And like I said, it just goes back. It starts going back to, you know, people who were never going to support it, just clinging to their position, just saying, oh, my God, this is the worst thing ever.
Yeah, and I think you're right. That kind of thing is going to happen, but it's going to be very, very slow. It's not going to be like in the next few months. It'll be over years and years.
No, it'll be over the next few years. I'm not saying it's over the next couple of months.
You know, people are still griping about the reforms that FDR made, for God's sake.
Yeah, I hear you.
You know, and certainly Johnson. And, you know, these things take years and years and years, and slowly, eventually they get baked in so that, you know, okay, Social Security is now the third rail of American politics. But
nobody wants to touch it. That was one of the things that I was tweeted about today, which was the fact that, I mean, my God, I mean, Paul Ryan, you know, proposed a budget recently in which originally he wanted to touch Social Security, Medicare, all that. Now he proposed a budget. I mean, he basically, all those proposals that he did before he ran for VP, he disavowed everything. All of it. I mean, it's like that Ryan budget, it's like it never exists. Ah, That was just a joke.
Anyway, so. Let's move on. I do want to say another breaking news story while we've been recording here. A plane made an emergency landing at JFK and rolled off into the grass, but everybody's okay, it looks like.
It doesn't count.
Let's take another break and we'll be back, and I won't have to roll the dice because there's only one thing left.
Oh, you can't roll the dice in just one? Oh, okay.
I could roll the dice.
Okay. All right.
I probably will roll the dice because, you know, I like dice.
Okay.
Okay, back after this.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
Okay, here we go again. So, campaign finance.
Campaign finance.
Stuff like this. I think we may actually... Go ahead. Give me your
take on this. I was going to say, since when the hell does money equate freedom of speech?
Supreme Court's been ruling that direction for a long, long time.
I get that, but I don't agree. I don't think it makes any sense whatsoever that money equates speech.
Yeah,
I don't think that the Founding Fathers, when they wrote the fucking Constitution, they meant freedom of speech meant freedom to donate money to any as much money to any campaign I want.
You know,
or that it had related anything to do with money.
And here I'm going to disagree. I don't know what the Founding Fathers would have thought of this, but to me, like, this is actually maybe freedom of speech is the wrong word, but freedom
of loaded. They said First Amendment.
Yeah, well, I know that's what they're saying. I'm not going to speak to the legal issues here. I'm going to speak to, how government should work kind of point of view, how people should work.
No, but I'm talking about the constitutional aspect.
Look. Okay. I am not a lawyer. You are not a lawyer. I don't feel qualified to talk about that. I will feel qualified to talk to you about what I think should happen. And look, to me, the fundamental issue here is not speech per se. It's freedom of political action and freedom to, you know, do what I can as an individual to promote the views that I care about. And an important part of that is indeed supporting the candidates I believe in, supporting the causes I believe in. And I think this is actually one area that government does need to keep hands off, is that, you know, this, to me, this is actually the most important form of free expression, free speech, etc., is political. I don't think government should have any business telling any individual or company, for that matter, Citizens United and all that, that it is not within their rights to support those who advocate positions they believe in. That's the fundamentals of politics.
I'm sorry. There's a difference between saying you're advocating, which is basically, okay, you have the right to go out and talk about it anywhere and nobody can abridge your speech. There's another thing, okay, which is I have the ability to donate to a candidate, give him as much money as I can, which basically I'm almost like fucking buying this guy. All right, which is what we're trying to avoid, is that we have elections that are bought and political candidates that are bought. Okay, yes. and that constitutionally it shouldn't be that democracy goes to the highest bidder.
Oh no, and I agree with you completely there. But I think that the right solution to that is not to tell people they can't do certain things with their money or they can't support certain causes. I think there has to be something else that levels it. So it says, you know, okay, this candidate has all of this kind of access. We got to do something to give the other candidates equal access. I think this is the question where the answer to speech you don't like isn't to restrict that speech or restrict their funding or what?
Restricting money is restricting speech.
Well, of course it is, because that money. I know. That
I'm
money
sorry,
is
but
used.
No. But my point is, okay, maybe in practical terms it is, but in real terms, if I'm talking about constitutional terms, the Constitution in no point at all, okay, did it say something about that speech was equated to money?
No. Of course not. But like, look, I'm talking about, you know, what do you not want to have in a democracy? You do not want to have the ruling people being able to regulate and control what potentially the opposition is able to do in terms of organization, funding, etc. And that's exactly what this kind of stuff does. In the end, you know, and I recognize it goes both directions here. But when you try to meddle in this kind of thing, this is another area where I think government is well-intentioned and campaign finance reform is well-intentioned. And the idea that, hey, we don't want to let people buy elections is well-intentioned. But the way that the government actually is able to regulate this stuff is ham-handed, doesn't have the desired results, is easily worked around, and inserts perverse incentives that actually end up not solving the problem at all and not having any additional benefits to it. I think it's much better, you know, let the free-for-all happen, but then try to build in additional mechanisms to try to get make it so that that money doesn't make as much of a difference anymore. Like, if you want to deal with buying elections and buying, you know, the issue with money in politics, yes, buying elections is part of it and buying lots of media attention, but it's also, frankly, about just flat out buying the politicians and having the major donors have a disproportionate influence over what you do once you're in office. So the real way to fight this stuff is much stronger restrictions and regulations on people in government, lawmakers, the executive, etc., on conflicts of interest and influence peddling, and like put real restrictive rules in place. For instance, it says, you know, a congressman must is not allowed to vote on any issue where any of their campaign donors have an interest in the result. You know, then nobody's going to bother buying the politicians because they can't do anything about it.
I don't know. That sounds. I don't know. All I know is, I'm just going to say this again. I don't think the Constitution in anywhere says anywhere remotely that you can stretch it to the fact that, you know, it defends the right of anybody to donate as much money to any candidate as possible.
Well, obviously, five Supreme Court justices disagree.
I see that, and I'm sitting over here in fucking disbelief that these assholes could come to that conclusion.
Yeah, and
look, but by the way, but here's the thing about it. Let me correct this.
Okay,
it's not that they. Wait a minute, because they didn't say that. Let me change that. They actually were okay with specific limits of donations at each individual candidate.
Yes. It's the global limit to all candidates.
Correct.
So you still have the limit on how much you can give to individual candidates, but now if you want to give that amount to somebody in every race in the United States, you can.
Right.
Essentially.
Yes. I could take the 500 House of Representative guys and I could give them the maximum amount to every single one.
Right.
And every senator.
Yeah. So anyway, this is another one of those areas where I have a fundamental conflict, because I agree with you 100%. I think the influence of money in politics is horrible and we need to do something about it, because it's like 100% corrupt at this point, as far as I can see. It's already... You know, the influence of money over policymaking is extremely high already. It's very hard to get anybody in elective office to act against the interests that paid them to get in, essentially.
Right.
And that's a problem, and I think we have to solve it. I just don't think that restrictions on how much money people can give to X, Y, or Z is the right way to solve that problem. And I don't think... I think it's a way of solving the problem that has potentially all sorts of bad side effects we don't want, because it fundamentally gets the government into the business of regulating how people influence other people and how political and how people choose, where we're going. And I think obviously you have to regulate how elections take place at a structural level. But I think you don't want government in the business of deciding this political expression is okay and this political expression is not. No, that's fundamentally something I don't want them doing. And yes, I believe spending money to support a candidate you believe in is political expression. And I don't know that I would use the word speech, but it's expression, and that's good enough for me. I don't think the government should be doing it.
Well, I think that to a certain extent that the playing field can be leveled to a certain extent in terms of how campaigns are run and how candidates get there. I mean, it makes for a fairer election where people wind up with people who actually represent the interests of the broader public instead of
potentially. And this is one of those areas where one of the questions is, do you believe the ends justify the means? Because it may well be that by fairly extensive campaign finance restrictions, or even moving to a 100% publicly financed campaign model, you could have some of those results that you are talking about. But it seems to me like this is an area where, in order to get there, you have to do some restrictions on people's freedom and liberty to do what they want to do that are themselves onerous. And so you've got a significant trade-off there. And let's say you did move to complete public financing of elections. Then it becomes a question of government gets to choose who they finance and how they make those rules.
I'm with you. I'm with you.
And that's all very dangerous.
No, I know. I know. And I get that. I understand that. I think that just the system of just this kind of unfettered spending also isn't, right. So there's got to be something a little bit more balanced somewhere. I don't think I have the answer, but I don't like the way that this is right now. So I don't think that if by law we pass a restriction, I still don't think it's restricting speech. And it falls under the First Amendment.
I hear you. I understand your argument. I'm somewhat sympathetic to it. I just feel like these kinds of restrictions aren't the way to attack this problem, and we should be more creative about it. But the problem, of course, with any of these restrictions...
Look, here's
the fundamental problem with any of these restrictions. Fundamentally, to change the laws that govern this kind of stuff, the elected officials have to change that. And they all have a vested interest in keeping it the way it is or allowing more money.
I know.
So
I know.
You're never going to get a change to these kinds of things absent,
some kind of massive, stupid scandal.
Yes, exactly. Okay, let's wrap this up. I do have one more breaking news update. And of course, people listening, this isn't breaking news anymore. But just for you, Yvonne, that latest earthquake in Chile has been upgraded to a 7.8. And it's apparently right outside of Iquique, which is a major city. So, and they're talking that they, at this time, it sounds like they do expect major damage and destruction happening from this one, given the proximity to a major population center and there are more tsunami warnings and coasts being evacuated and stuff like this as we speak.
Good Lord. Okay. All right.
So get back on your Chilean radio to listen what's happening.
Yeah.
And so thanks everybody for listening to us again. It'll be another week and we'll do it all over again. As usual, email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com or contact us on Twitter. I'm at abelsmay. Yvonne is at iambo. We love to hear from you guys. Otherwise, have a good week, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.